This is Eleanor Haddon. It's July 10th, 2001. I'm in Ketchikan, Alaska, at the home of Willard Jones. I would like to have you please give your English name, your birth date, and your place of birth.
Name is Willard Lear Jones, born in Kasan, 1930, May 30th.
Could you please give your height a name and what it means? Who gave it to you?
Okay, my name is Nastal. I took a while to figure out what it meant. I got this definition from Sylvester Peale in Heidelberg. So my name is Nastal. And he walked around his house, Nastal, Nastal, Nastal. He says, I think it means Greece. Tau is Greece. Nas is a house or container. So I think it means a container of Chateau, Greece. And that's all I can tell. I know there were several other Nastaus in Old Kasan and Kasan. I think one is a Peale family and someone else. I have to look at my records.
And could you give me the name of your clan and what the crests are?
I'm a raven. I'm a raven moiety, they call it. And Aslanus is sand people. I've heard several definitions of what it means. One is that there are so many of us who are like sand on the beach. But it's Aslanus.
Could you give me the names of your parents and if you know their height and name? Maybe your grandparents if you know their height and names?
My mother's name was Ohewat. And that means that when they got copper, they'd land the bottom of the canoe because they had little scoops, they used to call it, scoops of water out, and we used to use that on our rowboats. You know, they get a little scoop and kind of shovel the water out. So that means copper bottom. And Dad's name is Ast. He is a double-headed eagle. And I don't know what this Ast means. I know that there's several of them around, like Ross Sobolov. His name is Ast.
And their English names?
Anna Frank Jones. Louis Lear Jones. Name is Lear because he was raised by an aunt and her name was Jones. His mother died early on and his mother was married to William King Lear. So we should be Lears. The Joneses.
And the names of your grandparents?
Grandparents was Emma Smith. I know her husband is buried in one of the old cemeteries in Kasan. And she was married to George Frank. There was several Frank families. And he was one of them. And when he died, my grandmother married Patrick Henry. We call him Patty Henry. Chanel Patty.
And how about your father's parents?
Oh, father's parent was Matilda. Matilda Jones. And her husband was William King Lear. Dad was born in Wrangell in 1879. I don't know when mother was born.
Okay. And could you give me the name of your spouse?
Mary Elizabeth Baines Jones.
And your children and your grandchildren?
Two children. first born was Eleanor Louise Jones Haddon.
No.
And they have two children, Christopher Lynn and
Laird.
Christopher Laird and Jennifer Lynn. And Laird, our son, is married to Francine Eddy Jones. They have one son, Christopher. Christopher, oh shoot. Scratch that. Justin. Justin Jones.
And do you know any of the Haydn names for your family members?
Extended family?
Mm-hmm.
Ray, my brother, is Hoochie Klikdas, which is Klikdas means having wealth or power or influence. Hoots is bear, so he's an influential member of the bear clan. Raymond was, Henry was, I forget. Maybe someday I'll remember that again.
Okay. When you were growing up, did you use Haida in your home, and did you understand it or speak it?
I understand from my sister now. I don't remember that. I was fairly sick little guy. And I would lay with my mother, and she would tell me stories and talk Haida to me quite a bit. And Julia said that when we got stuck with what Mom was saying, they'd ask me and I would tell them. So apparently I understood a lot of Haida. But growing up, you know, never had much contact with it. So when I hear Haida now, and it's pure Haida, not slang, and most of those people are going, I would almost understand everything they said. But that's fading too.
Go to a time.
Time.
Pause. When you were hearing Haida, when was Haida spoken and when was English used?
I think is when they didn't want me to hear something. It seemed that way, because we didn't get instructions to do things in either spoken English, because they both spoke pretty good English, you know. Dad went to Sheldon Jackson to the fourth grade, so they knew a lot of English.
What places in or around Kasan have remained important to you throughout your adult life?
I would say Grindle, for one thing, even though we moved from the cabin to the boat, you know, lived on the boat. So Grindle is important by going out there in the 50s to sport fish for commercial and trolling. And then Carter Bay, because we've been going there for a long time, both as a child and then to get sockeye for home use. So those two places. But equally important was Chalmley, because we fished there, and that's about it. Grindle and Carter Bay.
What else did you get at Grindle?
Pardon?
What else did you get at Grindle?
Oh, seaweed and gumboots and things like that.
Okay. Did you, when you went to Grindle, did you just go there for the day, or how did you get there, and what did you do while you were there?
I remember, again, this is when we had a cabin there, had a cabin. And we'd move their lock, stock, and chickens. They had a chicken coop, I guess, a little fenced off area, wire mesh chicken coop. and it broke, and the chicken flew out and was swimming in the water. So we brought our chickens with us, and we were doing a little cabin there. This is, I don't know what we did. I think we were fishing because Joe Jones had a boat. Some people would go out there to get seaweed and then go back to Kasan. And we actually stayed there. I remember being there, playing on the beach and those things.
Okay. Do you know where your parents, how they met?
No idea.
No idea? Okay. Where did you go to school?
Starting at Kasan in the primary grades. Went to school in Richmond Beach, Washington, 1 year, junior high, seventh grade. Went to Sheldon Jackson in Sitka, eighth grade through high school. And then Oakland City College for 2 years in Oakland.
So when you were going to school in Kasan, do you remember what grades there were?
Through eighth grade.
Through eighth grade. Yeah.
And it was, went through different stages. It was a territorial school early on because they had a couple of big families that are not from Kasan but lived there. And then we made it another BIA school, but a territorial school. And there was Stevens and
do you remember any experiences you had while you were going to school in Kasan?
Yeah. I remember one of our early teachers, he was smoked a cigar. Healy Jones and I would sit in his lap and play with his whiskers. Thought that was good entertainment. And then for some reason we were sewing cards with yarn. And what that was learning from that. And then Minnie Stevens finished out 1 year when her husband died, David Morgan. Raymond brought him to Juneau, and he died shortly after he got there, but Minnie came back and finished the year. And, you know, usual playing around. Playing with boats in the water, running across floating logs at stink beats. Making little sailboats out of shingles. That was entertainment.
That was my next question. What other memories do you have of growing up in Kasan?
Besides playing, you know, we'd had a boardwalk, and it was more handy for playing in the wintertime. We'd pack water and ice the streets down and go from our hill down to where Joe Jones lived in a big red house. And then somebody like Pete would come on with a sand bucket. Sand bucket, spoil our fun. I remember one time being so cold I wet my pants, and there was kind of a little different happening for a little kid. It was kind of funny.
During your lifetime, what changes have you noticed in Kasan?
Well, probably mainly when the only producer, cannery closed. After that closed, there was no more work for people, you know, the women folks mainly that lived there and worked there, the fishing fleet. There was half a dozen boat would fish for mainly New England Fish Company, but also Ward Cove. So once the cannery closed, then the people left. There's no reason to live there if you couldn't support yourself.
Do you remember what year it closed?
51, 52, I think, somewhere around there.
Okay. So did you live there during that time?
Yeah, we lived there for, again, going through school. I went to school there through the sixth grade. They put me into the BIA school here for 1 year, but I couldn't adapt to the city life, so I went back to Kasan. See, his Uncle Julius had a house right across the school on Dearmont Avenue. That was that part of my life.
So when did you leave Kasan, and why did you leave?
During the war, again, Raymond, I guess we followed Raymond. Dad had a tumor in his ear. One time he went on the Invictus and went to Seattle. Mona was a little top. Probably the exciting part of that trip was to be tied up at Fisherman's Wharf and watch the trolleys and their electrical sparks from their overhead connection to the wires. It was a thrill of the evening. And then, where's the question again?
It says, when did you leave Kasan?
Oh, okay. That was the first trip, and probably 44. Yeah, 44. We lived on the Invictus for maybe a month, and then moved over to East Port Orchard across Bremerton, and then to West Bremerton, what is now West Bremerton. And I didn't go to school that year. And then the next year, 45, when Diane was born, we lived in Richmond Beach. And then 46, 47 years, Sitka for Sheldon Jackson, the eighth grade.
Do you get to return to Kasan at all, and how often, and why do you go back?
Prior to 46, I guess, we didn't have a boat. There's no longer, I was proceeding. I'd go back there on the Uranus or Luann. But until we had, I think 46 or 47, went back to get seaweed. Dad would tell us where to go and get your seaweed there. There should be some slippers over there and some gum boots. And that was started when we went back. And then 47, we got a little 21-foot boat. We'd go back to Grindle every year. And then 40, well, we bought a troller and a permit on the road of Maine. We'd go back to Carnaby. Before that, I'd not have an awful lot of floppy. And that was mainly to get food. Seaweed and sake.
Could you tell me some of the best things you remember about Kasan?
I guess just being young and playing in the trees on the beach, swimming and up by the Totem Park, they call it now, and swimming on the beach by the cannery. After we got married, we'd go back and did clams and cockles. And we'd get cockles every time the big tides. We'd carry a gas lantern and walk up there. So it's about a mile and a quarter. And we'd get cockles every month. That was fun. Cold winter time.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Could you tell me who your relatives were, your brothers and sisters, your aunts and uncles, who your cousins?
Siblings, do that first. I'm the last of 11. only knew probably five, I think. It was 1929. Two sisters died, and there was another brother born before Raymond. I think two of them born before Raymond. And he's the oldest, and then Catherine, and then Julia, and Henry, and George, and myself. But Melinda, we saw her in Juneau at TV San, or hospital in Juneau. And she's buried in Juneau, and there was the only siblings I know. Cousins, one first cousin was Wally Frank, Uncle Julius and Maggie. They had no children of their own, so they adopted Wally and Lily, I guess, and Juanita. Bernice, he stayed with them a while. A lot of people stayed with Uncle Julius. Francis Guthrie stayed there, and Sylvester Peel's wife, I forget her name right now, because they were very accommodating, taking care of other people. The only first cousin they had was Wally. And he was adopted. Extended family goes a long ways. You know, all the Joneses, starting with Florence Adams, Annabelle, Margaret, Pauline, I didn't know Lily, and the Rangel people, to the Churchills, and my dad's first cousin, Healy Jones. They were all related.
Aunts and uncles?
Auntie Maggie, Uncle Julius. And all the rest were cousins of the second order, I guess.
Okay. What other families lived in Kansan when you lived there?
Oh, I forget. Oh. We had a half sister, Martha. Martha Haldane. And they had two children, Sarah McGalpin and Kenneth McGalpin. They were nephews. Other people I lived there with the McGalpins, Blackstead's. I know Joe Jones and his. I don't know his wife. And the Olsons. I've said Blackstead's. Healy Jones had a family, David Peel, his wife, Walter Young, Felix Young, Louis Thompson, Mug Up Charlie, and him. And there was a Fanny Jones, I just barely remember her, she's from a different family. Maybe the family here in Sitka. I'm not sure on that. Williams. Sophie married to Healy Jones. One married to Torres. Amos William, I didn't know him, but I know two children like Stephanie and Eileen. That's kind of it. Pretty small population after, you know, diseases I went through. And annihilated 98% of the Haidas from Kansan.
And were they related to each other in any way?
I'm Jacob Thomas, you know, I didn't mention him, but he was there. Bill Burgess, another name. I didn't know the Charleses because they had left. Irma was gone. Irma. But I became aware of people. Maybe the Joneses. and Robert Young's, Les's family. My generation was, there's four of them, and I knew three of them. A couple other ones born after I left.
Could you tell us a little bit more about some of the kinds of foods that were important to you growing up, subsistence kinds of foods, where you got them, how you prepared them?
A lot of dried salmon. Don't ask you the stuff from Carter Bay. But Uncle would go to Chalmley and get a lot of dog salmon. And from the dog salmon, you get dog salmon eggs and smoke that dog salmon at the eggs. And potatoes, we had a potato garden. Adams Point, I think it's called now. We had a little plot there, and remember Colson's Artilius, so they were up there working the ground over in his family. And there's other gardens around, but I don't know where they were. I just knew the Olsons, and we, because we were there at the same time, packing seaweed and fertilizing, and I don't remember going up to Hillam. Probably did.
Do you remember going up when you harvested them?
No. I just remember planting them. Remember you planted them when the geese were flying north. And I don't know when they go north, but they're pretty much on the same schedule. And a lot of times the flock was led by a snow goose. You can see the V formation with the white goose and the idiot.
Do you remember how you used to celebrate holidays?
Christmas, was a community event. Remember that? They had the community hall and a big tree, and everybody would exchange gifts. And there were stories of Raymond going to Ketchikan to buy stocking, fruit, nuts, candy. The hard Christmas candy, and you'd have pie socials. I remember that. I remember because George and Henry talked about it quite a bit. And they'd put a little dinner maybe in a box and they'd bid on it, or a pie social where they'd have dessert. And George liked to talk about one outbidding a competitor to get a maple, what do you call it? Pie, and got sick from it. His story. And that's about it. Christmas, and this is a fundraiser for Christmas, I guess. 4th of July, we spend a lot of 4th of July's in Carter Bay, because that's when the Sauk guys were running, and we spent it up there. Henry's birthday was the 3rd. And I remember coming into Carter Bay with the Uranus with the Roman candles announcing we're coming into Carter Bay.
Here we are.
Thanksgiving, I remember one Thanksgiving, there was a lot of family there. Uncle Julius and Maggie had a turkey. We had a turkey. And the Olsons had a turkey. And so we had our big dinner for 3 days in a row. And every day somebody would bring their turkey. Judy says, the family, you know. Because all the Joneses were Dad's cousins and Uncle Jerry. So we had a big, long extended Thanksgiving Day dinner. Some of the things I remember that we just mentioned.
Okay. Did you used to go hunting?
As a hunter, I was a failure. I went hunting with Dad once in Henry. We went hunting at Deer Creek, which is up by Carter Bay. And Dad went to Dad, and he had one. Could see only out of his left eye, I think. So we walked along, which is right across Cassandra at Baker Point, or Shepherd's Point. And he had to shoot left-handed. So we didn't get any deer. Went hunting with Poppy up the mountain. Only got one deer. Not a hunter.
Okay. But there were other hunters in the family.
Yeah, Henry would hunt all the time, alone. I know one hunting story happened in Saltchuk, and it wasn't in the family, but Charlie Wong would go hunting with his little dog, and it, you know, small part of the story, but got lost because they had to go uphill to get back to Saltchuk, and he didn't do that, so he spent the night, and the dog knew how to go home, but he didn't follow his dog well anymore. That's kind of a story that gets repeated.
Did your parents ever talk about moving from Old Cassand to New Cassand?
No, I think they moved around 1900, 1904, that area. And I know that Walter, when he's made a recording, mentioned where that, this is where Louis Jones lived, in Old Cassand. He was born in Wrangell 1879, then went to Sheldon Jackson sometime. I don't know when he left Wrangell or when he went to Sheldon Jackson. I don't even know when they got married.
Do you remember any experiences during World War II? Was there anything?
A couple of things. Henry lived with Chenam, Nana Chenam, and he had a little, want to cut?
Yeah. We were talking about experiences during World War II.
I mentioned that Henry lived with Chenal Patty and Nana, their house. We knew he's a brother, but that's where he took care of him. I guess he built a tower and put a windmill that ran a generator, 12-volt generator. So he had a 12-volt battery in his room, and he'd have electric lights. That was, he had left and gone to the army. But I can remember when the draft started, George was the first one to be called, and he came in from fishing, and he had a greetings from the, what do you call it, the draft board. So he was the first that went in. I think probably October they were out fall fishing, and then Nancy, after the Pearl Harbor, and he enlisted. And then they went to Haines, we call it Fort Chilcoot. And I remember tacking up tar paper over the windows during blackout, and rolling him up during the day to get some light. And he came home on military leave. One time we went logging for airplane spruce. And we were on the Uranus with Dad and Teddy Irving and I were with Dad. And he used a rope about 3 inches in diameter, I guess, to head log across the middle of the boat with a cable running on the bow stem, and we'd yank these things off the beach, out of the wood. And all that, Teddy was pretty strong, and he was chopping on a nut and broke a piece of the axe, not the handle, but part of the axe broke. And then when George and Henry came on leave, Henry went with Raymond and George went with us on the Uranus. And then we were using cable instead of the rope. And we had to pull that in to get a run at it, and it got tangled up with the propeller. And I had to put the boat on the beach, take the cable off. And it was during the war that we went to, on the Invictus to Seattle, and Raymond went to work at Bremerton Shipyard. And the next year I worked for Standard Oil, work on a tugboat and barge. And that was during the war, but that's the main things that I can think of right now.
Do you remember the Depression? Are you old enough to remember?
I'm a Depression child, I guess. Not really, because, you know, I remember, I guess, remember getting food on the Uranus at the fall time. The smell, the odor I remember most is celery. You put the skiff on the beach, you pack it up, and celery smells so great. I still remember that. And they say that your smell lasts the longest, and we'd have to catch a bus from East Port Orchard to Port Orchard to get the ferry to Bremerton and Bremerton to Seattle, and the school buses, or the buses that pick people up, you know, that odor will live forever. Every time I smell it, I remember riding a bus, waiting for a bus.
Do you remember anything about the CCC?
Oh, a little bit, not an awful lot. I remember one January they brought home a salmonberry blossom, first blossom of the year. And I remember them wheelbarrowing sand to make the road and clearing the trail. Other than that, I don't think we went up there to watch them bring in the poles from Wilkesan or carving a new one. And all I know about it now is what I read in a couple of notebooks from C.R. Snow. The name of the people are familiar, like C.R. Snow and the Forester, Archibald, those things, but the actual building of the park, it was 1938, 39, 40.
Could you tell me a little bit about what that CCC was all about? I mean, what they got, it was part of a government effort, wasn't it, or something? Explain to me a bit about that.
Yeah, the Roosevelt, you know, started a lot of different ways to get money into the people because of the Depression and the fall of stock market and everything being bankrupt. So they had the WPA and in Alaska they had the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps. And it was an effort to work with the Forest Service in retrieving poles from the old villages, like in Kowok and Heidelberg and Wrangell and Saxman and Kiskit and Cassette. They went out there and had crews working. I think they paid $2 an hour for the work, and they created parks so they could get some way to the people. As we travel around the country, they went to a cave in Tucson, Arizona. And it was made passable for people to go through it by the efforts of the CCC. You know, it made cement and walks and steps and things like that. So it was a nationwide effort to get some employment to people and do things that was good for the area.
So in Kassan, what they did was decide to rebuild that house, or what?
Well, they called it Whale House, and I think Sennicott had built a house there. So they made it into a park, and they brought in about 6 or 7 poles, and some of them were restored, and some of them were carved new duplicates of it. And because everybody from Old Kassan were living in Kassan, they built a park there and built a trail.
Do you know who were some of the people that worked on that?
Yeah, we have a...
Do you want to wait a second?
Okay, the only record of who was working at CCC was all those that were available to work. I've seen a list, and have a list of those that worked. And actually it's a log of the people that worked there when they were off, when they were sick, and when they went to Ketchikan, that good information, and who were the chief carver was, who was a carpenter, and pictures of building that, and the kind of tools they used. But the name of my, I would say everybody that was available to work.
Okay. Here comes the tough ones. As we've been learning more about our traditions and being Haida, what should we be teaching our children about being a Haida?
Yes, indeed, it's a good one. I'm glad you asked that. Because it's something we wrestle with quite often, you know, because we live in this changing world, and it was changing all the time from the beginning. Because we've adapted our stories are similar to the Thlinkets. Every person that tells the story has their own version of it, so there's a little change in that. So we live in a changing world, and what I think we have to do is define where we are today and what's important from the past. And I think this project will be one of the limbs, one of the planks of the culture that we need to have today, because a lot of the values that were taught were lost or changed early on. And for a long time there was nothing to replace it. But we've learned and are learning from the Haidas in Masset on what's important. Because we have to redefine what it is to be Haida, what is important to you and this crew working on this project, you know, what do they think is important? So that's what we do, is try to help define that, what's important. Because what's important to us is not what's important to the next generation. accept the values that we try to have, and they're similar to, or have been adapted to, through the contact with the government, with the church, and values that they placed on the reason they're here. What, and it's not only, we are not the only ones that have that, trying to identify who we are. You take a look at the up-and-coming countries of the world, you know, they're having a hard time identifying who they are because they're being greatly influenced by the Western culture. The Eastern people are having a hard time. Communist countries are adapting to the economy of the West. And the reason that we were able to do quite well, because you know, we were a competitive race of people. You know, the potlatch was importance of the potlatch and the status of people. These are kind of Western values and Eastern values, but we need to adapt those things to our way of thinking, our view of the world. So what do we teach? We teach them what we know and what we can learn. The legends, the stories that imply social behavior, the dancing. Your guest, how you give gifts, and what you do when you're given a gift. Now those are important to we as people. Now when we have people dying, those people that are not, the funeral ceremony, you know, is adaptation of the potlatch. The wedding ceremony and those things are gone. But I suppose it'd be proper to ask, what do you think we should be teaching you? You know, go out and ask your compatriots, you know, what do you want us to learn from the elders? How do we go out and learn these things? Because we can be talking about many things that went on 100 years ago that don't apply today. So we need to know, what do we do? What growing up in a Western society, what do you think, if you know from the elders what is important to them, what's important to us today as a group of children, grandchildren? What do we need to know so we can understand what it is to be Haida?
So what do you think is important to pass on?
I didn't answer that, did I?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
But this is an extension.
Okay. What should I be teaching?
What should you be teaching?
I guess it is the values that existed because these values were changed dramatically with the missionaries, the government. So we have to identify that. And we're concerned now with this administration and the need for the rich to get richer. And that's kind of like what the potlatch became after it became available to everybody. And this is the last, or the tail end of the potlatch culture, and it became more evident in the Quaggas where they had the competition. Everyone had to have a potlatch better than the one before. But it was a potlatch that was the event that people recognized. So, what do we need to teach? Teach you the good things about being Haida. Respect, identification of who you are, how you, not the fact that you got the biggest totem pole or the most wealth, but the fact that you've done it, or you are part of that. Understand what it is. That's one tangent of what we should be teaching, I think.
Another question?
I had a question about when we were talking about passing on stories and that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if you have any particular stories or things that you like to share or remember or thought about during your life or remember hearing?
I think what I've learned, I guess, from other people is what their stories do, what they tell. And I took a class in cross-cultural education in Bellingham, and the instructor was Coos from Coos Bay, and he had teachers mainly from BIA School of the Interior along the Eskimo country, and they talk about stories, storytelling. And what I remember that mentioned before, but mentioned again, is these stories imply social behavior. It doesn't say thou shalt not, give you 10 different things that you should not do, but they imply things that you should do in the form of a story. And they get interpreted a different way, like this. Man tearing a sea lion. You know, some people call it the mother-in-law story, or story of the black man, whatever. But it teaches you a couple things of how you should behave. You know, we get a reputation of being pretty much subdued, bashful, not aggressive. But if you understand how that works, I guess.
Of all the things that we've asked you, is there anything else that you would like to add that we forgot to ask?
Well, I think you did a really good job in compiling these questions. There's different tangents we could take. And it'll be interesting to see how this all fits together.
So there's nothing else you'd like to add at this time?
Not at this time.
I want to thank you. Do you have any questions, Freddie?
Not really. Do you know anything about the poles? Any specific things about the poles, or did you have any favorite stories when you were a kid?
I remember only bits and pieces of it now. Mother told me the raven travel story quite a bit. And at times I can hear parts of that, but I don't know the whole story because he traveled around, they call him the trickster, the creator, whatever. And whatever he did, it was already in existence. He just kind of brought it, made it usable. He didn't create anything. It was there. The sun was already around, the moon and the stars. He just brought them out of the box. That kind of thing, the stories. And the only part of it I remember now is Raven was trying to catch this salmon. He would say, "Ayo, Diku." And the king salmon would jump out and hit the raven in the heart. So it came out of the water and was at his feet. Very short part of a long, long story. And that's all I remember. Sorry. House of the One?
House of the One? How about it? Is there anything else? That's it?
That's it.
Well, thank you very much for your time, your information.
He gets to see me. Right?
But it's very nice to do 30 seconds of.